Abrams versus Walker.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tom Peters on behalf of the plaintiff. In this case, the District Court granted summary judgment, and we're asking the Court to reverse and remand the case for trial for three reasons, or at least primarily three reasons. First of which is that there was substantial evidence in the record that the arrest that occurred in this place was based on an unconstitutional and therefore improper retaliatory purpose. Second, the second reason the Court should reverse is because, contrary to what I think the District Court was saying and what is included in the defendant's brief, probable cause to make an arrest does not defeat the First Amendment retaliation claim. There would still be a claim that could go ahead even if there were probable cause to make this arrest. And third, with respect to the arrest, there was no probable cause to make an arrest under the circumstances that were confronting this officer on that day.
Well, however, didn't the defendant verbally criticize the officer?
The plaintiff,
yeah.
Your Honor?
Yes.
No. There are disputed facts.
Did he refuse to return to his car after three orders by an officer in lawful authority?
No, Your Honor. There are disputed facts on that point. That is the testimony that the District Court selected from the trial testimony of the defendant in this case, but the police officer. However, in the plaintiff's testimony in the same trial, he had a vastly different version of the same event, and if one, which is why there's a question of fact here. With respect to what the plaintiff said, as to the same sequence of events, all that he said occurred was he had seen suspicious activity around his client's car prior to them leaving the courthouse. He was worried about that. He told his client and a passenger in the car, be very careful, put your seat belts on, drive according to the law, etc.
What is this that you refer to as the suspicious activity?
Well, while the plaintiff, Mr. Abrams, who's an attorney, was in court with his client, there were several Illinois state troopers, in the plaintiff's point of view, snooping around this car for no apparent reason. They then, as a result of seeing that, Mr. Abrams advises his client to be very careful with driving home, and in fact Mr. Abrams says, I'm going to follow you as you drive home. And he does that. Mr. Abrams does not see any indication of any traffic offense, yet he sees Defendant Walker, the police officer, pull over his client. Having seen that, and having previously seen the suspicious activity around his car, around Mr. Forte's car, that's the client, Mr. Abrams stops his car, and according to Mr. Abrams' version of the event, all he did was get out of his car, take one step, maybe two. The officer was already approaching him. He identified himself as the attorney for the person who had been stopped. He asked a reason for the stop, because Mr. Abrams, had seen no valid reason for the stop. And then he was ordered in a threatening tone, including a litany of expletives and a discourteous manner by the police officer, to get back into his car. Now, Mr. Abrams then complied with the officer's request to get back in his car.
How soon?
According to Mr. Abrams' testimony, there were exactly two questions. When asked about this, the officer could not place an exact time frame during the trial testimony. However, given common sense, the length of the time described in the testimony of Mr. Abrams, it couldn't have taken more than a minute or two for this confrontation between Mr. Abrams and Defendant Walker. And all that Mr. Abrams was doing at that time was questioning the legitimacy of this arrest.
Do you think that lawyers should do that?
I think that if I...
On a scene, on a highway?
I think, Your Honor, that if I believed, or if any lawyer believes, that his client was being unconstitutionally arrested.
Unconstitutionally, is it now?
Yes. He believed at that time, this was Mr. Abrams' state of mind, he believed at that time that this was nothing but harassment. And if an attorney believes that his client is being improperly harassed, whether unconstitutionally or otherwise, by a police officer, the attorney should stop.
He should get out of his car and walk on the public highway and interfere with the officer.
He did not interfere, Your Honor.
And let me finish.
I'm sorry.
And interfere with the officer doing his job as he's off it. He should get out of his car and walk on the highway.
I think, Your Honor, I have two answers to that. One is, the short answer is, yes, I believe an attorney should protect his client's rights. The longer answer is, even if an attorney should not have done that, the fact that Mr. Abrams did it in this case still presents a question of fact as to whether he was arrested based on an improper, retaliatory purpose rather than what is implicit in Your Honor's question, that there was some valid basis to make an arrest. Regardless of whether there was a valid basis to make an arrest on some traffic violation.
The basis to make an arrest is probable cause. And did you argue in the district court that the officer lacked probable cause?
Yes, Your Honor. We argued that the officer lacked probable cause. We also argued that with respect to the arrest, even if there were probable cause, there was a First Amendment, an improper First Amendment basis for the arrest, which would allow his retaliation claim based on the First Amendment to remain even if there was probable cause for some arrest based on any one of these alleged activities. We made that argument in the lower court. The lower court, in our view, took a skewed version of what the trial testimony was from the state trial and focused in on only the testimony of the defendant, Officer Walker, in order to reach certain factual conclusions, which you cannot reach, in our view, if you also look at the testimony of Mr. Abrams. This is a classic case. If you look at the testimony of Mr. Abrams and you put it side by side with the testimony of the defendant, Officer Walker, what you will find is that they are in dispute about virtually everything. Mr. Walker is saying that the plaintiff was discourteous. Mr. Abrams is saying the officer was discourteous. Mr. Abrams is saying that he followed the orders. Walker is saying he didn't follow the orders. What it boils down to is that there is a scenario here, if we look at it from beginning to end, and I think that's the test for First Amendment retaliation claims, we do not require a confession from the defendant in the civil case in order to proceed with the First Amendment retaliation claim. What is required under the Seventh Circuit case law is a chronology of events from which a jury could reasonably infer that there was an improper retaliatory animus that was involved in the arrest. If that is the case, and there's more than enough evidence to support that conclusion, because if you believe the plaintiff's testimony, the whole scenario from beginning to end was a case of a police officer, for whatever reasons he was acting, but for a police officer acting improperly and unlawfully and, from my client's point of view, unconstitutionally in stopping Mr. Forte and then threatening to give Mr. Abrams ticket and later arresting him for an offense which he quickly enough discards because it's obvious that that's not a valid basis for an arrest when he was arresting him for the
rebuttal time.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, continue.
I'm sorry. With respect to those facts, there is a genuine issue of fact, there is a dispute, and there should be a trial because that's how we resolve those kinds of issues. And for those reasons, this Honorable Court should reverse and remand to the District Court for the trial that both sides deserve.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Nadine Wickren on behalf of the defendant appellee, Kent Walker. We agree that questioning a police officer's authority is protected by the First Amendment. However, Mr. Abrams' conduct in this case went beyond that.
But don't we have disputed facts about that? I mean, I looked very carefully at the state court transcript, and I don't know under what rule of law we look at only Officer Walker's testimony about that.
Well, actually, I believe that the district court did look carefully at Mr. Abrams' testimony.
I don't see that reflected in her orders. Where did she say Mr. Abrams was courteous, that he returned immediately to his car, that he was willing to give his driver's license? I mean, all of the things that Mr. Abrams is saying, I don't know what's true. I mean, maybe Officer Walker is absolutely telling the truth. Maybe Mr. Abrams is, but they really are in conflict. And I worried at first whether maybe this was something that only came out at the end of the day in Mr. Abrams' affidavit, but I think his trial testimony is consistent with that affidavit.
Well,
his state trial testimony.
Right. I think that in some sense, but for instance, refusing to go to the car, he now says that you know, Mr. Walker never said, you know, please return to your car, but on page 143 of the trial transcript, Mr. Abrams says, yes, he asked me to go three times back to my car, and I didn't. I think a lot of the things that Mr. Abrams is disputing at this point, if you go back to the trial transcript, were actually not in dispute, or the things that were in dispute were the timing of when it was said.
But there's another problem, too. I mean, at one point in your brief, you say that Officer Walker was concerned because Mr. Abrams didn't go back to his car. And then another point, a few paragraphs later, you say Officer Walker was concerned because Mr. Abrams did go back to his car, at which point Officer Walker follows him back. And, you know, sort of my question was, well, which is it? You know, is he supposed to go back to the car or not? Because it sounded to me like he was doing something wrong in Officer Walker's view by going back to it. And then there's this problem raised in the reply brief with the 20 minutes, where you have rested on a supposed 20-minute delay in the arrest of Mr. Forte, whereas in fact it sounds like there's no delay at all, other than a minute maybe, in the arrest of Mr. Forte.
I apologize if there's confusion. As far as the first point about his concern, this was on the side of a highway and a traffic stop, which is inherently dangerous. How I meant by concern is, you know, he was concerned about who this is that is approaching him, that stopped his car and was coming towards him. After he had told Mr. Abrams that he was going to receive a ticket, Mr. Abrams said, well, I'm not taking a ticket, I'm leaving. He proceeded to leave. Then the concern became, he is leaving and I'm trying to give him a ticket. So if that concern got confusing, I apologize.
Right. But let's look at pages 10 through 12 through 13 of your brief. The six reasons the district court denied the post-judgment motion. Most of these, the district court accepts Mr. Abrams' criticism and says, well, it didn't really matter. So, like, even if the stop of Forte had been unlawful, not relevant to Abrams' arrest, the court then says Mr. Abrams' tone was irrelevant, and that wasn't it. We have this dispute about the delay that I just mentioned. Then there's the asking for the license, which the district court says that wasn't relevant. Then you say the dispute about not to touch the knife, of course, whether that was told did not impact the decision. Then the spin and twisting, where the court says Abrams cited a page in the record, but that page has Walker's testimony on it. Abrams disputed that. So it seems to me this is a house of cards falling apart.
Right. There are some disputed facts, but I would submit that there are...
Which reasons that the court thought were still relevant are left to support your position?
Well, the fact that Mr. Abrams refused to go to his car, which he does not dispute, the fact that he said he was leaving and was going to leave after Mr. Walker told him that he was going to receive a ticket for backing up and parking along the highway. I mean, even if Mr. Abrams didn't believe that he deserved a ticket, he had no right to leave after being told that he was going to receive one, and also the fact that he grabbed the knife from the roof after Mr. Walker had walked away.
After Walker illegally took it out of the car, you mean?
Been no determination, and there's been no argument about that.
No, it's just a little surprising to me that he decides he can search the car without consent, but anyway.
But even if Mr. Walker's activities here violated Mr. Abrams' First Amendment rights, we submit that he would be entitled to qualified immunity. This was presented to the district court, and to this point, Mr. Abrams has not brought up a case that would rebut this immunity. He has said that, first, you know, no retaliation is allowed under the First Amendment. However, qualified immunity is a more particularized question than that. This case, there was not only was there questioning of Mr. Walker's authority to issue a ticket to his client, but there was also other conduct that makes whether a First Amendment violation here is a more murky question. There has not been a case that is clearly established where not only is there speech, but other conduct that could be seen as unlawful if an arrest is improper in that scenario. Unless the court has any other questions.
Anything, Craig? That's all. Thank you. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, Your Honor. Unless the court has some questions, I'm content to rest on the argument so far.
Thank you. We will take the case under advisement.